RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Louis Boulanger is a retired actuary and the founder and director of Louis Boulanger Now Limited, LB Now. He's a chartered financial analyst and a fellow of the CFA Society of New Zealand, an award he received in 2022 for his services to the industry. Before coming to New Zealand in 86, Louis worked for 9 years with a global consulting firm based in Montreal, Canada. In New Zealand, he worked for another global consulting firm, Mercer, for 18 years, including as chief executive of New Zealand operations for 5 years. In 2004, Louis took time off to study monetary history, including the role of gold as money. Louis's practice provides independent investment advice to wholesale clients only, and bullion services to private and institutional clients of all sizes. And Louis joins us again on Money Talks this morning here at RCR to talk about gold, why we hold no gold while China and many other central banks actually are buying and stocking up on gold, and what Louis thinks of the current leadership, I guess, and thinking of our central bank as it is now. Louis, welcome back to our Money Talks here at RCR. Nice to have you back again. I knew you'd be back.
That's very nice of you to be so confident. I'm very happy to be back.
All right. One thing that we've been finding out about recently is that other central banks in the world, not ours, and we can talk about that, but other central banks are buying and stocking up on gold. And it's probably an obvious tell for something. But do you want to talk a bit about that, why they're doing that and why we aren't?
Well, it's not that didn't start last week or last year. I mean, central banks had for years, for decades, in fact, had agreements among themselves to sell gold. And they had these Washington agreements, you know, quinquennial agreements that all ended in 2009. So shortly after the financial crisis. And strangely enough, since then, every single year since 15 years now running, the central banks as a whole, the whole sector of central banking has been net buyer of gold. Sure, you can, you know, dismiss that as being unimportant because it's all these countries and the rest of the world that don't matter or whatever. But, the fact is that central banks and increasingly some of the Western countries or certainly in the G20, some have been buying gold, Singapore being one of them, for example. So it's not a new phenomenon, but it's been accelerating. And in fact, last year was the last couple of years were the highest acquisitions made by central banks in net buying terms. This year is not over yet. It may well beat that record. Why are they doing it? Well, you know, they are doing the responsible thing. That's in my opinion. But I think more importantly is that they recognize that the dollar, the U.S. dollar's role as the overarching and accepted everywhere means of payment is not ending, but is eroding and is less and less important. So they need something else. And in order to be able to trade between themselves more confidently and being able to settle any imbalances in their trade and something that's not their own currency, because, you know, who wants to hold a fortune in rupees or in rubles or in yuan?
Yeah.
You want to be able to exchange that for something that everyone else wants, and that's gold. So that's why gold is being bought. Why does our own reserve bank not buy any? Well, I mean, that's a question that you should ask them. But I don't know the answer to be certain, but I can tell you a little anecdotal story about that, if you're interested.
Sure, let's hear that.
Back yep. Probably around 10 years ago, can't remember his first name, but a gentleman by the name of Wheeler was the governor of the central bank. I attended one of his one of his speaking engagements at the Northern Club, I think it was. And I asked Mr. Wheeler the question back then. I think it was 2014 or thereabouts. He was governor for 4 or 5 years in that sort of era. Does New Zealand have any, because I wasn't even sure if New Zealand had any gold reserves. It's not mentioned anywhere. And does New Zealand have any gold reserves? And would New Zealand consider buying gold? He hesitated quite a bit before answering the question. Of course, a little bit taken aback by such a question. But he did say, no, we don't have any gold. And we have no intention of buying. The gold price back then was in the process of falling from its earlier peak in 2011. So well, eventually it ended up at 1,000 or thereabout, 1,050 in 2015. I'm not sure where we were at that point in time, but we were, you know, it was certainly getting cheaper. But his comment, I remember it vividly, was that why would we buy gold? It's far too expensive anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, the gold price is almost up three times, or at least double, if not more, since then. So I can't imagine it being even considered in the corridors of the central bank. Now, I did a little bit on that topic, a little bit of research about New Zealand gold reserves. Very limited research. I can't say it was deep research, but New Zealand did have gold reserves. I think at one point they probably have over 30 tons. And I think it amounted to something like 1 million ounces of gold. But that's in the early 60s or 50s. And something very, looking at a graph of the gold holdings of New Zealand, official gold holdings, it dropped precipitously to near zero in 1961. So I'm not sure what happened in New Zealand in 1961. I wasn't here. And it could be interesting to do some research on that. And I think it remained very close to zero, certainly less than a ton of gold for many, many years, and then eventually came to naught in 1991. So that's a brief history of what caused it. The only thing I could pin down as having happened, not necessarily in New Zealand, but in the world in 1961, was what's called the London Gold Pool.
No,
I don't know if you've ever
heard that. No,
heard of that. It was a concerted effort between a number of countries. I think it was mainly the US, England, and some European countries. That was before European Union formed, to control the price of gold, because we were then under the Bretton Woods Agreement monetary system, where the dollar was the reserve currency and the dollar was redeemable in gold on demand by any country who wished to redeem their dollars for gold at the rate of $35 an ounce. And that was becoming increasingly difficult to maintain that peg. And so the London Gold Pool, quite overtly, not in hiding, declared that they were going to sell some of their reserves to maintain the price at that level. And it started in 1961. Now, New Zealand wasn't a member of the countries that agreed to operate officially, but that coincided the beginning of the London Gold Pool. By the way, failed eventually in the late 60s when France decided they had enough and sent ships across the Atlantic and got gold for their dollars. So it ended. But 1961 happens to be the beginning of that exercise, and that's when New
Zealand, maybe our gold got sucked out for the, you know, the mother country head of the empire. You know,
the mother country,
we were still.
That's my guess, but I have no proof of that.
They said, we won't take your sheep or butter if you don't give us your gold. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, probably.
I think we did with the Russians a butter for larder vehicle deal in the 80s. So we swapped butter for cars, larder cars. So
right. Oh, the good larder cars, yes.
Yeah, well, I used to live near where they were stored, you know, after they'd been shipped in, and there were just queues and queues of them. And the more you saw coming into the country, the more you saw on the side of the road or in the the workshop, you know, because I don't think they were that reliable. Anyway, for those who are into a bit of history, this is not 1961, but back in the Second World War, the Niagara was mined off the Northland Coast, New Zealand ship, and that apparently had a whole lot of gold on it, went to the bottom. So, but that's not 1961, Louis. So now I'm just thinking, with these other central banks buying up gold, I think you touched on it, but with BRICS coming on, that underpins then, doesn't it, the credibility of the currencies? Because, like you say, it's value that is not the individual currency. So that keeps that underpins an alternative system, doesn't it? So that's a big threat, isn't it, to the Western world financial system, potentially?
I don't know if it's a threat, but it's, you know, I don't think they intend in replacing the dollar.
But they can move away from it, well, right? That's the thing. They can move away. Yeah.
Exactly. And they can move away from it and trade between each other without having to use the dollar or use the dollar system, the SWIFT and the U.S. banks that, you know, why would they want to continue doing that? They continuously sanction for anything that the U.S. doesn't like. So they're sovereign nations and they want to be able to govern their affairs and their money, monetary dealings with other countries. They can't do that very efficiently or well yet. But it's always, you know, it's been 15 years, that too, in the making. You know, the BRICS started in 2009. And so I was basically a little club that gathered and talked. But it's grown quite significantly. And if you go, you can see what they're doing, not fully transparently, but there's a lot available on the BRICS website. And there's a big, an annual summit meeting coming up in a couple of weeks. I mean, we can't second guess what will be decided there, but it's not insignificant. I mean, I think there's over 120 countries invited and that said that they would be attending. So there's a lot of interest. So what comes out of it over time, we'll see. But gold is important simply because they need something that everyone will trust, that everyone will take. That's why gold is money. You know, it's you're just as happy to not get rid of it, but use it to pay as you're happy to collect it in receipt of an exchange. Than any other really fiat currency that exists, especially in those countries that don't have the liquidity the U.S. dollar has. And that's the strength of the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. But they don't need to establish a reserve currency. They just need to establish a settlement currency or a trading currency. So that's what they're working on. And I think it's no secret that they all accumulate gold because they want to each have a comparable amount of gold in reserve as a percentage of their total reserve assets, and so that they can all be equally happy should they develop a currency, a common currency, which could be in the working. I know a lot of people are making the comment that it's coming and it's already decided. Well, I haven't seen anything official. And so I reserve my judgment on that, but a lot of speculation on the unit, it's going to be called apparently with a 40% backing. Why 40% backing in gold? Because, you know, that's how the Bretton Woods operated.
Right.
Basically. Yep. And that's why it ended, because the U.S. couldn't do that anymore. The gold was flying out of the vault back in the early 70s when they closed that window.
Yep.
So gold's important. That's the only thing that needs to be remembered, because gold is money. It's not fiat. It's not debt. It's an asset that's accepted, especially in extremists. And that's what Alan Greenspan said famously when he was asked by the U.S. Congress, and I think it was 99, shortly after the infamous Gordon Brown bottom, when the Chancellor Brown told the central bank to sell the gold at the, I think it was the lowest price in the 90s at $250 an ounce. Shortly after, I mean, Greenspan was asked in the Congress, should we sell our gold? And he basically said, well, no, because gold is always accepted in extremis as a form of payment. So we're not in extremist situation, but we could end up in extremis. And hopefully the U.S. does have the 8,000 or more tons they say they have. And if they do, then they should be okay.
A country like ours, though, New Zealand, if we don't have any gold in the vault or none that's sort of quickly available that we can, I don't know, use somehow. So our currency starts to devalue. There's really nothing to stop it become a black hole where light can't escape. But, you know, there's nothing to stop any fall, is there? I mean, maybe I'm looking at it too simplistically, but that's what it kind of feels like.
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's so based on faith. And you know, faith can be well-placed or misplaced. And when what we have is fiat money, and that's what we have, it means that it's money we have to use because it's legal tender and it's the only legal tender. So you can't refuse it in payment, and you can't force anything else for payment. So it's you place your faith in the governance of the system and the central bank, you know, in particular, and in the government to not borrow more than what they can pay back. And it's when it's becoming clear that the debt cannot be paid back or is difficult to pay back at normal interest rates, that faith starts eroding. And this is what's happening with the U.S. I don't think it's happening with ours because we don't matter. We're a small country, and I mean, there's a bit of trading going on in the New Zealand dollar, but what backs the New Zealand dollar is nothing specific. It's faith in what maybe New Zealand has and can produce, and the fact that we're follow the law, well governed, presumably in that respect. So there's good justification for having faith that the currency won't go Zimbabwe, yeah. You know. But if faith does erode for whatever reason, you know, my short time here, which is 40 or so years almost, is the New Zealand dollars varied between 40 cents and 80 cents U.S. And that's quite a range. Now, could it go below 40 cents? Well, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, there's nothing that says that 40 cents is the bottom. Could it go above 80 cents? Well, I don't see really why not. But, hey, we're the other side of the coin of what people think the U.S. dollar is worth. That's the key thing.
Right.
But, you're right. I mean, we're sitting ducks in terms of what our money is worth.
So what would a prudent tonnage, measure it in tonnage, ounceage, of level of gold would it be sensible to have, let's say, if we had any, for an economy our size? You mentioned 8,000 tons is good for the US, so obviously less than that. But what would be an ideal quantity, do you think?
Oh, you know, I don't have an answer for that. And I think at the moment what matters more really for the economy, people are getting all agitated about what the central bank's going to do when really it has absolutely no bearing whatsoever. What I find endlessly amazing is to see how much the central bank is always wrong and they're always too late or too early. I mean, it's normal for interest rates to be above the inflation rate. That's the normal thing that's a sound environment, and savers get rewarded for saving. That's what you want in a productive economy. But we were now, you know, and we, since, you know, before just 2019, before COVID, we've had negative, the other situation where inflation has been higher than interest rates. And now for a very short period of time, because the central bank increased rates rapidly, We are at a window where interest rates are too high relative to what the inflation is becoming. So people are complaining and saying we need lower interest rates. Really, at the end of the day, it's people can't afford servicing their debt. And it's more than that. It's banks are not willing to lend those rates because they know that they won't get paid back. So they're going to be forcing the central bank to drop interest rates to low levels again, stimulating more and more debt. And, you know, let's keep those bubbles going. It's a very sad state of affairs, but, you know, eventually that ends badly.
Yeah, so it's kicking the can down the road sort of behavior. At some point, though, something gives.
Yeah, I think the main culprits in causing all those bubbles are the commercial banks, not the central bank so much. The central bank seems to be basically acting on the pressure of banks, of commercial banks. Loans for asset purchases or for consumption are not productive loans. They're not helping the economy at all. They're just, you know, feeding inflation, asset inflation, or in the case of when it was fiscal stimulus, then that went straight to consumption prices. That's why we saw the rapid rise in consumption inflation. But if it's not consumption inflation, if it's not showing in the CPI, it'll show in asset prices. And the most obvious one in New Zealand for so long has been the housing market. I mean, it's almost as if the housing market is the New Zealand economy. And the banks are very irresponsible in that matter and fueling, continuing to fuel that bubble.
Well, that's because they do fractional banking, don't they? They're lending out 100% of the 10%.
Oh, well, that's a false belief too, fractional banking.
Okay.
You should, I don't know if you've ever heard of Professor Richard Werner.
No, I haven't.
You should invite him on your program. He's a scholar, he's a PhD in economics, but obviously he speaks quite well about those false theories about where does money come from, you know?
So they're not lending 10 times what they hold in the bank and converting that non-money to hard assets when people can't afford to pay for the money that never existed in the first place. So we got that wrong, have we?
Well, it's a theory.
okay.
Banks. I don't know how much time you have for this, but banks are not.
We've got a few minutes here.
I'm sorry, a few minutes. Okay.
A few minutes yet. Yep.
At law, banks are not deposit-taking institutions that lend out money. They're described as such, but there is no such thing as a bank deposit at law. When you put money at the bank, you know, what you do is you lend your money to the bank. You know, the bank borrows your money. It's not your money anymore, okay? You become a creditor of the bank.
Right.
Okay. And when you go to the bank, not to lend to the bank, i.e. make a so-called deposit, but when you go to the bank to borrow money from the bank, what you end up doing is signing a contract. And the minute you sign that contract, you've issued a security, a debt instrument. And that is what the bank purchases from you. Because it purchased that from you, it puts that money it owes you in a bank deposit. It makes a debt. A bank deposits are liabilities for the bank. So it makes a bank deposit in your account, and you can use that money to buy the house, you know. Mm. But that money came from nowhere.
Came
from nowhere. And Professor Richard Werner proved that empirically in a scholar paper that was published by Elsevier, a very reputable financial journal, in 2014. And he took him a while to find a bank in Germany that was willing to open all its books and systems to let him see what happens when he himself took a loan of 200,000 euros and was going to take that money that the bank was lending him to deposit it in his other bank to see what happens at the bank where he borrowed the money from. And the bank confirmed that they didn't even look what reserves they had. And they did, no money came from any other depositor's account.
Gosh, it just like beamed through. Like
I know. Like the mind is repelled.
Crikey. Okay. So it just sort of materializes on a screen somewhere, and therefore it exists.
Yeah. And that's why banks should be more responsible, because they've got an extraordinary privilege in creation of money. Credit creation is really the what banks do. And so where they create that money matters to the economy, and there should be better regulations as to what banks can create credit for. And that's one of the arguments he's been making for many years. In fact, you know, think about it. There's only a few big banks. Why are there not 1,000 small banks for the local communities? That's how Germany built itself back very quickly, is with many, many small banks. And that's how China did it too. And Japan, basically, after the Second World War. But now, you know, none of those countries have a lot of banks either.
Yeah, they've all like consolidated into, what, 3 or 4 or 5 major brands. And even they probably own a bit of each other as well in the end.
That's right.
All right. So just to finish up, Louis, how big do you think people have been calling for 100 basis points? So what's that, over one? It's about just about 1% down, isn't it? 1% rate cut. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, you look, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's nothing the central bank would like more than to do that, to please the banks. But they won't, because it would destroy what's left of their credibility. So they'll probably do 50 basis points, but they'll do another one. When's the next? Was it in November?
Yeah, before the end of the year.
They'll do another 50 basis. So we're probably going down 200 basis points within the next 12 months. We're going back to low interest rates. Financial repression, which is, you know, basically interest rates far below inflation, is coming. And for a decade at least, in my view. That's the Russell Napier's view, and I fully support it.
All right. Okay. Good to catch up with you again, Louis Boulanger. I get that right again?
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
Nice to chat with you again. And money coming from nowhere? Yeah. Boy, we're going to have to think about that for a bit.
I know. But you should look it up. Send me an email if you want. I'll give you the link. It's a little tedious to read, but at the end of the day, it's proven empirically that that's what happened when he borrowed his 200,000 euros. The money came from nowhere.
Where'd you get that money? Nowhere.
Where does money come from?
I got it from nowhere. I can prove it.
People generally believe that it's central banks that create money. Yeah, the very base money of reserve banks' notes is created by the central bank, but that represents a very, very small percentage of the total money supply. Most of the money is created by commercial banks when they lend, well, when they actually purchase your debt instrument.
That's the way to think about it. Okay, Louis, we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much for coming back on Money Talks.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you, Paul. Bye-bye.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.